You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president begins this week. I'm former U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, and this week, legal expert Ricky Kleeman joins me on my podcast, Stay Tuned with Preet. We talk about jury selection, the latest trial developments, and legal strategy.
From the defense point of view, for Donald Trump to be signing checks for Michael Cohen, it would have been something usual because Michael Cohen was working for the Trumps.
The episode is out now. Search and follow Stay Tuned with Preet wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, everybody. Part two of our post-fight doubleheader coverage following UFC 260, which went down at the UFC Apex in Las Vegas in front of a lot of celebrities. It was an interesting night. But we have a new heavyweight champion of the world, Francis Ngannou. We just heard from him reacting to the big win. What could be next for him? Is it John Jones? Is it Derek Lewis? Could it be the trilogy fight with Stipe Miocic? Everyone seems to want John Jones. I want John Jones. I'm excited for it. We'll see what happens. But in the meantime, we're here to react to this event with all of you. We had the People's Pre-Fight Show. Now we're going to do the People's Post-Fight Show. So you guys had a lot of questions, a lot of comments during the press conference stream. So we're going to address all of those things right now. And we got the whole trio here. I am Mike Heck. Alex K. Lee is with us. There he is.
Hey.
Hey. And on the ones and twos, Casey Lydon back.
That was smooth. I hurt my neck.
We're off to a great start. Just a terrific start. Oh, but AK.
Wait, big night. Opening a new can of seltzer. Got my LaCroix. Ooh. Everything's going good.
There you go.
Zero calories.
Good for you, my friend. Watch those cows. All right, AK, you've been waiting patiently to give your thoughts on the brand new heavyweight champion of the world, your reaction to the main event of UFC 260.
How nice, guys, is it to have a huge UFC title fight and without controversy, clean finish, no weird illegal blows, no issues with the stoppage. Herb Dean's only human. I mean, I wish he could have stopped that last hammer fist, but honestly, that's very hard. That's a very hard thing to stop. You know, that was just a scary moment. But otherwise, we had this narrative, guys, going in. We had this narrative for whether you're a fan of Francis Ngannou or not. It is a narrative that was laid out ever since the first fight between him and Steve Miocic. Maybe also after the Lewis fight too. That's part of the story. This guy battles his way back, looks all the world like he is. Has what it takes to be the world champion and just has to prove it and does it in just incredible fashion. Not just getting the quick knockout, but both getting the quick knockout and answering the questions about like, oh, but has he improved his wrestling? And he showed us like just a little bit of wrestling, just a little bit of grappling. He looks fantastic. Stipe, a great champion going out on his shield, as they say. Not the first time I think we're going to use that phrase on the show. And it's just so refreshing. It's so refreshing that we can now move on. There's now certain questions to be asked about what's next for the champion, but let us be at our most optimistic here and just picture all the big things that are ahead for Francis Ngannou.
Well said, AK. Well said. Round of applause from the live studio audience. It's a great win.
They're late. They're tired. They're on a delay.
Yeah. So there you go. Brand new champion, Francis Ngannou. Just the scariest guy in the octagon and just the sweetest guy outside of it. I mean, just at that press conference, just answering the questions, so calm, cool, collected. Just want to go home, reflect. I'm not calling on anybody. The UFC makes the final decisions. I mean, just a company guy right there. It's like watching Bull Durham, you know, when he's like, what should I say at these press conferences? Got to do what's best for the team. France is up there, just so calm and kind. It's such a scary
man.
Won't
somebody think of the children? You know, we always say, won't somebody think of the children? You know, always think about the children. Francis Ngannou, our new UFC heavyweight champion, is thinking about the children, wanting to give them something that they can aspire to and follow your dreams, kids. Follow your dreams.
There you go. And I know a lot of you like to ask matchmaking questions. Don't do that. I mean, you can if you want, in case you can just answer all of them. But me and AK are literally going to do a whole podcast on this tomorrow.
Yes, within a few hours, really, if we're being...
Before we go to the questions from our wonderful viewers, Mike, what was your what were your expectations coming into this fight, and what do you think went wrong? I know you did pick Stipe, which is, I mean, that's a fair choice. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people pick Stipe. It wasn't like crazy to pick Stipe, but like, what do you think went wrong for Stipe outside of getting punched a lot?
He got overzealous in that second round. He landed a good shot, got too aggressive, and got countered. The patience on both ends was key. Francis showed more of it, and that's why he won the fight. I mean, when it comes to like how I thought the fight was going to play out, yeah, I picked Stipe to win, but the way the first round played out, and even like the second round until the finish, exactly how I saw it playing out. Like, Stipe was going to have to overcome a lot. If it got to the third round, things are going to change. And then Stipe would kind of, you know, move away and wear him down. He would land a takedown eventually, start to tire him out, and then start to go to the body and end it in that sense. But that's how I saw it. I didn't see Stipe going in there and just being up 30-27 and then stopping Francis in the fourth round. He was going to have to overcome hell to get it done. And he was doing okay. He weathered an early storm in the first round. The takedown, I was surprised to see him shoot so quickly early. And then he got stuffed. Stopped.
It was a bad takedown attempt. It looked desperate. And
that's when my confidence in my pick started to go away. I don't know. I mean, I expected Francis to dominate the first two rounds and then Stipe was going to start to take it over. But Francis is just such a powerful and dangerous man. All he needs is one moment, one sharp thing. Stipe landed a really good shot, but he rushed in and Francis landed like half of that shot and put Stipe down, and that was it. So...
yeah,
kudos to him.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked when Stipe did get hurt in that second round. He just got really discombobulated in the head because once he got hurt, he just kind of panicked and actually charged in and was like, oh, I'm going to punch you harder. It was like, that is just, once you get touched by Stipe, you get the heck out of there. We didn't talk about this, but on the DC and Rogan, I thought a good point they were making. They did say the small cage will be a big factor in this fight. And I believe it was. And I believe it's definitely in Francis' advantage. Did you see that? Did you feel that? Like, if it was the big 30-foot cage, I feel like Stipe, because I think we all expected that Stipe, he'll have to kind of go through hell to get to that tired version of Francis that he would need to defeat. There was just not enough room for Stipe to run, to be honest. Did you sense that? The small cage was not to Stipe's advantage tonight?
The walls are closed.
It had to make a difference. I know Dana White has said he doesn't feel it makes a difference. I know there's actually been numbers that kind of have shown that it doesn't make like a huge difference. But I mean, in this case, when you're talking about heavyweights and you're talking about, you know, we actually have a direct comparison. We saw how their first fight went in the normal size cage and then how it went the Apex cage. Yeah, it had to make a difference. It's not the only reason. Again, I think this version of Ngannou maybe probably can do the same thing. Maybe it wouldn't have happened in the second round. Maybe it would have taken longer. But yeah, I think it, as Mike just said, it kind of helped the walls close in just a little bit quicker on Stipe Miocic. And you need all the room you can get if you're going to dance with Francis Ngannou.
It just had to feel super claustrophobic in there for Stipe. Once you got hurt, like, you just can't back up and angle out and just keep kind of circling out. Because remember, with a small cage too, not only is it smaller, but the angles are actually a bit sharper too. So it's just it's even easier to corner someone. So now I just thought that was definitely it worked. I mean, it was good for Stipe, good for Francis, bad for Stipe. But
I can't imagine what it's like just having to face Ngannou again. I know. Again, Stipe Miocic isn't us. He's a pro fighter. He's not afraid of anybody. But boy, to go five rounds with that behemoth and win and a hard-earned win, that first round, hard-earned win, and then to have to do it again 3 years later, it'd be like going to war twice. You know what I mean? It'd be like surviving a tour of duty. Pick a horrible war and surviving a tour of duty in that war 2 years, and then a few years later saying, guess what, the war is still going on and we need you to go back out there. We know you barely made it out last time. I don't know how he does it. Again, on the other hand, hey, that's why he's a great champion. Still, probably as of today, probably I would still say the greatest heavyweight of all time. We'll see what Ngannou does with his run. Right now, Miocic is the greatest heavyweight of all time. And that's why he agrees to do this kind of thing. So he could have retired after the Cormier fight, maybe, right? But look, he has his reasons for wanting to fight, and there's no shame in it. And like we said, he had his moments. You know, he had his moments in this one. He just got beat by a guy who is now pound for pound looks like one of the best fighters in the world.
As Francis, like I threw this out on Twitter, and I can't recall a time. Has Francis ever been in danger in a fight? Has there ever been a point where you think, "Oh, Francis is about to get finished," or he's about to get subbed, or he's
oh,
I don't even. No. That's what's wild about him. Either I can't think of that really for any fighter. John Jones has been hurt. He's been rocked. Maybe Habib has. Habib was never really in danger.
Barely.
Yeah. I mean,
one moment where Michael Johnson like tagged him with a combo and everyone freaked out and was like, "Oh yeah. My gosh, his weakness is striking." And anyone was striking, and it's like literally like the smallest slip that he got like after getting punched.
Yeah, that was commentary related. Yeah. Where everyone freaked out. He's hurt.
Yeah,
he's hurt.
I really think the dominance of Francis is really being understated here, because like that's why the Stipe's heavyweight run was so impressive. It's like, because they're heavyweights, they can all knock each other out. Anyone that like essentially the worst UFC heavyweight can knock out the best heavyweight, and because everyone hits hard, you know. But like Stipe just seems, maybe you can grind him out and get him tired and just, you know, win a decision, but he feels invincible in there as far as like actually finishing that man and truly hurting him. Like you can slow him down maybe and contain him, but I just have a hard time seeing anyone beating him. I mean, but I've been really high on Francis for a while. I thought as soon as 220 was over when they fought the first time, I was like, okay, Francis won me. Stipe won that fight, but Francis is going to win the rematch. I was very confident that moment. But yeah, it's kind of cool. Got to finally see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It took a while. And in a way I'm like, thank goodness that I think a lot of us maybe would like to see the rematch a little bit sooner, but these things usually happen so quickly, that it was nice that we got to see him climb his way back, clearly develop, clearly mature, almost right in front of our eyes. Again, we didn't get to see the expansion of the skill set until tonight, but, yes, in this age where they give rematches after either, where they give title fights off of losses, rematches off of like fast finishes for no reason, for them to be patient with this guy, again, whether it was intentional or not, whether it was just happenstance, obviously they couldn't match him up because Miocic was tied up with Cormier, so it was, you know, I don't want to give them too much credit because they just had another matchup that they preferred, but it worked out, you know, and it worked out great for Ngannou. And yeah, and this is why we're here now talking about a guy who, if his run goes on, he is, you know, trending to become the greatest heavyweight champion of all time, though the reign could end pretty quickly depending who he fights next. Let's put it that way.
I'm crazy. I'm going to say it out loud, but I think Derek Lewis has a better shot at beating Francis than John Jones. I'm just going to say
you're not the only one. You're not the only one who said that.
Oh, is that not okay? Is that not a crazy thought?
Yeah. I think I don't know. The thing is, we just have no idea what he looks like. What John Jones will look like.
Yeah.
We can project and certainly project and make some educated guesses, but it is different. It is a big change, right? It is a big change. So I don't know. But again, I don't think anyone would be super surprised. I think Ngannou would reasonably be favored going to the matchup. But John Jones is, depending on how you view, of course, his history of drug test failures, is like the greatest fighter of all time. So if he can bulk up properly, if he can get up to a reasonable size and fight the way he's fought at his best, I don't think anyone would say, oh, my gosh, it's a shocker he beat Francis Ngannou. It's like, no, the best version of John Jones should be a good matchup for him. But at the same time, I think Ngannou will be favored, and I'll certainly be picking Ngannou.
What's the best version of John Jones?
Boy, that would be...
That's the problem. I have to go back some. I mean, maybe the Gustafson rematch, but I kind of thought Gustafson...
Yeah, that was great.
That's not the same Gustafson, though, that fought him the first time. I mean... It's crazy.
I think we're looking at maybe, yeah. I mean, look, from that the second Gustafson fight, even the Daniel Cormier fight. But again, these we do have to take into account he did fail drug tests for the second Cormier fight. And yes, it's certainly worth mentioning. So I mean, when I say the best version of John Jones, people might just want to roll their eyes and scoff and say, oh, we know what the best version of John Jones looks like, and we know why that best version existed.
And it's unfortunate, you know,
and that's fair.
You need foils, motivations, and perhaps some fear, and I think Francis Ngannou checks off all those boxes for John Jones, so maybe this is what he needs. Maybe he needs that test. He needs to feel like he's going to be challenged. Because I don't think he felt like he was going to be challenged in the Anthony Smith fight. I don't even feel like he thought he was going to be challenged in the Thiago Santos fight. Maybe the Dominic Reyes fight, but I feel like he woke up that morning and thought he was just going to run right through Dominic Reyes. I don't think he's going to wake up that morning and be like, I am just going to run through Francis Ngannou. He's going to wake up and say, I need to be on my P's and Q's or I'm going to sleep. And maybe that's where he's at his best.
I am so curious to how, if that fight gets booked, that we all hope it gets booked. I'm really curious how John, we know how Francis is going to approach the fight. You know, Francis, he's a sportsman. Like, John's a good fighter. You know, this is the next fight. I'm a champion. We're going to do this. But John, like, what angle is John going to go at this? You know, oh, these heavyweights are slow. They can't punch. You're not ready for my power. Like, I don't, is this going to be a super cocky John Jones? Or is this going to be like, I don't know. Like, I'm super curious. This is new territory. This is fun.
This is why this matchup has to be made, right? There's when you have this many questions, the only other answer is in the cage. We all want to see it made. Okay, so just one second. Can we change? Do you have control over the Periscope stream?
Yeah, what's happening?
It just says guest fighters. Oh, I think it's
that is weird.
We changed the post fight show. No worries. If you can tweak that, I'll read out this comment. Someone was asking. Were the refs bad tonight? I didn't think the refs were. The one weird one was the Mark Smith, of course, how he handled the O'Malley Almeida situation. I didn't think him not stopping the fight the first time was that bad. Not acknowledging the first walk off. I thought that was okay because Almeida, was put on his butt for sure, and it wouldn't have been a bad stoppage. I mean, you could have waved it off there, though. I'm sure Almeida's side would have protested. Definitely in the third round when Almeida got rocked again and kind of did like a full barrel roll into the middle of the cage, you definitely probably could have saved him that extra punch. So I will say it was a little questionable for Mark Smith, but not the worst I've seen from a referee. And I don't think, and then I think this person also mentioned Herb Dean maybe not getting in quickly enough to stop that hammer fist, but
No. This question goes to one referee and one referee only.
Like Mark Smith,
correct. That guy. Come on,
what happened to that person? That was so long ago now. I remember. What were we talking about? He did something really stupid. What was it?
Oh, is it the mouthpiece thing?
The mouthpiece thing was part of it.
Oh,
He tripped him. Then he accidentally trips a fighter.
That's not good. Yeah.
And then Marc-Andre Barrio gets on top of him.
In mount
and beats six shades of stuff out of him over and over again. It was like three extra minutes of unnecessary punishment. And then he goes, you know what? There's 3 seconds left in the fight. Let's stop it now. Why didn't you stop it a minute and a half ago? what are you doing? Like, just if you're going to let it go this long, just let the man survive for the last 3 seconds. I mean, why would you wait that long and then stop it then?
the timing was a bit odd. Casey, I think I saw you mention though on Twitter, you didn't hate that he let that fight go on a little more.
I didn't hate it because right. What was the guy that lost as how do you say his name? The guy that lost
Azaitar.
Azaitar. Unfortunately for Azaitar, like the problem was he was actually still like it was a bit of that Calvin Kattar situation. Like every time you thought he should stop the fight, he would still defend himself properly. He was moving. He was getting out of the way. But then I don't even know the fighter's name. I can't. It's so long ago. The guy that won. He never got too crazy. He never lost position, and he just. It could have been stopped. I don't mind it not being stopped. I understand the optics looked ugly, you know, because especially his head rocked back a couple of times. But I'm okay with it. He was
mostly done heading into that third round. Like he was already like in
so deep he was gassed. Trouble.
Yeah.
The referee has to recognize that. The referee has to recognize that for sure.
So I didn't hate it, but I understand the issue of it. Do we have issues? But there were no issues. I mean, I thought the O'Malley stoppage. I thought everything was fine. It was just fights are crazy. It happens, but
Valel is bad. Other than that, I didn't think it was that egregious. The tripping of the fighter.
Everything was kind of weird because he did his mouthpiece. That was the fight, right? Where his mouthpiece just fell out. That was it. Yeah. And he just kind of bent over. Uh-huh. And I think the ref thought he was knocked out, but then he realized, I think he was about to stop the fight. Because that's to me, I thought, I didn't even see the mouthpiece thing. I thought he was like, just like, he got hit and he was just like, you know, just wobbled. I think the ref was trying to stop the fight then. And then he goes, oh, wait a minute, you're just bending over for like, he pulled a Bisbing. Anderson Silva, like, hey, my mouthpiece, you know?
He tried to call a timeout. He's like, hold on 1 second, let me go pick up one of these.
Yeah.
I'm seeing two streams trouble. Now. I'm seeing two streams now on our.
What are you talking? Did no one delete the last one? I thought someone deleted the last one.
No, I'm seeing two streams now, and then so the link, and it's like it's a different link now. But yeah, I'll admit. Look, I thought that Abuzaitar was. I thought he was rocked. It was a very weird angle, like. I thought he was rocked, and then when they showed the replay, I was like, oh, like, I didn't even see, like, did Barrio even hit him with anything? And then I saw the Jaron Valel trip, and I was like, oh, Jaron, you really made a meal out of this one, Jaron. You've really made a meal out of this one. So, but outside of that, the very first fight of the night, again, Mark Smith, maybe probably a little more decisive at the end of the O'Malley-Almeida fight, and Herb Dean, maybe slightly out of place, but when you're doing a heavyweight fight, that kind of like movement with like the way Ngannou and Miocic are moving in there, I think it's impossible to not occasionally be caught in the wrong position. So we're very critical of Herb Dean usually, and I would have loved if he could have saved Miocic from that very, very, very scary post KO hammer fit. Like that's one of those shots when you watch it in slow motion over and over again, you're just going to wince and cringe like that's and just be scared for you know, Miocic's long-term health. That's how scary that hammer fist was. Completely unprotected shot. But I can't blame Herb Dean for it. He was shouting, calling off the fight. If you're in Ngannou, you're not hearing any of that. You're in the middle of this finishing flurry. Mm-hmm. So he was maybe a little out of position, but he dove in as soon as he could. So I don't blame Herb Dean for that one. But yeah, other than Jaron Valel, I thought it was a good judging. I thought was pretty good too, Mike. I don't know. How did you feel about all the judging? I actually thought they did all right. Yeah, we had a couple. I know what we're going to talk about. We had a couple of minor controversies.
There was nothing that would necessitate a robbery review. I'll put it that way. I thought Modestus Bukauskas won. Mm-hmm. I thought too much was put on Oleg Zaitchuk just moving forward. Like it was all about the pressure. Like Bukauskas was landing way more.
Well, there was a double problem. So I thought Zaitchuk also landed the bigger shots. So that's why I scored it for what's it? Wait,
say how Buffer said it.
Help me. What did he say?
That was
he said oh check check check. He just like went check check check. Like
I was still reeling from Berriu. I was still reeling from Marc Andre Berriu. That one hurt me. Oleksaychuk. There we go. Oleksaychuk. I thought he was landing the bigger shots, but I hated that, as you said, Mike. That the way Rogan and DC framed it after was that immediately they didn't clearly didn't agree with the decision. And they were saying it was because of the aggression, because he was coming forward. So now that's how everyone's going to interpret it. I actually do think if you watch the fight again, I think Oleksychuk was landing the harder shots, or it looked like he was landing the harder shots because Bukauskas was countering beautifully, and he was landing a lot of hard shots of his own. It's just hard to gauge because the reaction, maybe he was selling it a bit more. Also, I probably a lot of Oleksychuk's, like, he was throwing some hard shots, and I thought Bukauskas was blocking a lot of them too. So again, maybe I was fooled by that. Maybe I thought more of those went through than actually did. But yeah, it was very close. The other controversy was the 30-27s for Jillian Robertson. Which I had no issue with.
I thought the round two was such a clear round for Robertson.
That's what a lot
such
of people
an absolutely was, clear round, to the point where if the submission was in a little deeper, she had such control over Maverick that entire round outside the last like maybe 15 seconds. I thought it was like a, if you had a half point round, it'd be like a 10-8.5. And I was like, what?
For me, the difference would have been if she had thrown in a little bit of ground and pound, if she had thrown in some damage, because for me, it's like, I'm starting to really strictly kind of look at fights through the official, unified rules of scoring, and like damage takes precedence over everything. So I'm not saying Miranda Maverick like totally ran away with the damage, but Jillian Roberts position changes and control are not supposed to be ranked above damage unless the damage is even, which it wasn't, because even when Jillian Robertson was holding Miranda Maverick, Maverick was actually punching her a lot. And I'm not saying she was doing a lot of damage, but Robertson was doing no damage, so the damage was not equal. The damage was clearly in Maverick's favor, and that is how you are supposed to score fights: is who actually did damage.
That is some effed up judging criteria then, because
according
to that, then I could have you on the ground, have you in a choke. You could be fighting a choke for 4 minutes and 55 seconds, but if you just go like this, hit me one time. More damage. That's exactly what you're saying, man.
That is not exactly what
you're saying. Moving on.
She did not come close to finishing.
No, I'm telling you a hypothetical round, because you said if damage is all that matters, if damage is all that matters, and you only go to grappling and control.
Oh, I would consider nearly finishing a submission as damage.
She was defending submissions almost that whole round.
We're gonna rewatch that round. She defended them all. She was not close to being finished. She was at no point close to being finished.
But being close to being finished doesn't mean that's not that. So you have to be close to being finished.
You don't get points for almost landing punches either. So I don't give points for almost getting submissions unless it's really in deep, which it wasn't.
But that's completely subjective then. It's like if it's in deep. What is in deep? Like, so if she's defending a choke like this, and she's got her chin tucked in, that's not considered in deep.
I think the judges can tell the difference. Did you think that Miranda Maverick was in any serious danger during that round?
I thought it was such an easy 10-9, almost a 10-8, because she has so much back control.
Control is not part of
the round.
Control is only part of the scoring criteria if it results in some sort of damage or I would say again, like a really close submission. If you're just controlling, that is secondary to damage. That's in the criteria. I know how it looks.
Gentlemen,
you and Sean Sheehan are the only people in the entire world.
Sean Sheehan,
you two people
who know how
judges.
To judge fights properly. I know. Sean Sheehan, if you follow Sean Sheehan, he's really, really good at understanding the criteria. So I admit I adhere to kind of a lot of the things that he says. So maybe me and him are on an island on this one. But again, watch the videos he's done on how to score fights. Eric McGraken has also done videos recently on how to score fights. And you'll understand why those 30-27s exist. I actually thought the judges did a really good
job. I thought she had control. The submissions weren't deep enough. It was definitely such an easy round for Robertson.
Yes. Control, it's secondary to damage. And she didn't come close to doing any damage.
Oh, man.
All right. Hold on.
Watch it again.
Guys, we got like five minutes.
Oh my gosh, that's right. And we haven't answered a single question.
All right, go to question.
It's got to answer something.
Jeez, I'm just bring Jed on the show now.
He'll agree with me. You don't want that.
Oh, well, never mind. I saw some of his tweets tonight. I don't want him on the show either. He was still like, eesh. All right, here we go.
Let's try and get. All right, readers and listeners.
It's a big question, right? What happens to Tyron Woodley?
It's a big one.
I'm saving my answer for on to the next one. Because okay. I thought about
I'll,
this.
I'll address
I thought
it.
About so, this.
Apollo J specifically saying Dana had a one hanging statement about him. The hanging statement was he was asked, what do you think is next for Tyron now that he's lost, after this performance? And then he said that's four in a row now for Tyron. What, 38, 39 years old? Yeah.
30.
And so that was, yeah. So, but that was Dana's statement. That was it. It was like six words. Did not really make a conclusive statement about what was next for Tyron. A lot of people seem to infer that he was saying that's it, that he's done, but he didn't say anything clearly. I think it'll come down to sort of what we discussed a lot earlier in the week of like, we'll see how much of a pay cut Tyron might be willing to take, because for the right price, I'm sure Dana White will be happy to use Woodley's reputation and name to sell a fight and possibly boost up another fighter. I don't know, but I'm of the camp. I do think he gets another UFC fight, but he's a big ticket item, and if the UFC was going to cut him, I mean, now it would make a lot of sense.
Apparently, it was his last fight under his contract too, so not technically a cut, but yeah, same thing. It sucks for Woodley. It's just a money thing. It's not because Woodley's not a competitive welterweight anymore. He's not top five. Woodley, I expect Woodley to be of a different organization if he chooses to continue fighting.
He will get the choice of one matchup or he will be gone.
Yeah, you have to fight next week too.
Might
give him the JDS treatment.
Wasn't it nice to see him fight? Really fight tonight? He fought tonight, right?
Really?
He didn't get backed up against the cage. He didn't get held down. He fought, you know?
Yeah, like we said, like, wow, that's the best Woodley we've ever seen. And he gets knocked out. It started out so good though. All right.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, guest fighters, for joining us.
I don't know what happened. That was like an old one. I don't know what happened. All right. Let me find a question.
While you're doing that, someone is saying, I value damage more with control, but I scored Cejudo versus DJ 2 for Cejudo because all I did was land DJ. Yes, because DJ did no damage and Cejudo didn't do any damage, so you go to control as a secondary score. Thank you for commenting. Okay, sorry. Mike, go ahead.
Would Stipe even want a rematch? I mean, I would rather work my confidence up against others first. I mean, I would say Stipe would probably want the rematch. Not tomorrow or anytime soon.
Maybe not this year.
I mean, every fighter is going to publicly say they want the rematch. I don't know if Stipe really wants the rematch, but I'm sure he does, actually. I mean, big payday.
If he's
obviously
got like one more left, that's the fight he'd probably want, right?
Yeah.
Well, he has a lot. Yeah.
We're getting close. We're getting close. No matter what he says, we're getting close.
If Stipe doesn't get the rematch, what does he need to do to earn the rematch?
I think it's just one win away.
Derek Lewis.
Derek Lewis, right?
They both guys have fought everybody except each other.
Yeah. I think he could also just be sort of as White alluded to today. Like he said, I have other heavyweights who want to take this fight, John Jones. So for some reason, John Jones prices himself out and Derek Lewis prices himself out, which I can't imagine he would. But if that happens, then it's like, hey, Stipe, come on down and get your immediate rematch.
I think we should change the language. We keep saying the fighter prices himself out. I think that really puts the blame on the fighter. I think we should say if the UFC pays the fighter their worth. Maybe.
Yes. Or in this case, refuses to pay. Yeah, refuses to pay this guy. You're right. That's a better way.
I feel like every time we're saying that, we're kind of blaming the fighters. It sounds because I know we're on the same page here, but
All right, we'll take one more question. I know we'd want to go longer, but we have a lot still to do.
It's late.
Unfortunately,
we've got stories. Yeah, we've got stories to do.
What the heck? Sorry. looking for a question. Sorry. We have these big exciting cards.
Oh, yeah. That John Jones Lewis John Jones Ngannou fight has to happen though. I kind of agree with Mike's optimism. Like they'll find a way. They'll find a way. I want to believe that they'll find a way.
This is the fight. You have to make it. Do you think Stipe should have retired after the Cormier trilogy fight? Stipe had the opportunity of retiring on top. Miocic is still the GOAT, but this loss stings. I don't know.
I think
that's so tough to answer those kinds of questions, you know, because we're not these people. We don't know where the motivation comes from. No idea. And he looked pretty damn good in those last two Cormier fights.
I thought the whole last, I don't even count Stipe DC 3 as a real fight. I thought there should have been a no contest due to all the dang eye pokes that the refs never saw that we clearly saw, you know. Dude, DC had to go to the freaking hospital. He didn't even have time. He couldn't even do a retirement. Like, hey, thanks everyone. I had a great time. Thank you, Dana. Thank you, Hunter. Blah, blah, blah. He had to go to the freaking hospital, make sure his eyeball works, you know? So, I thought, and that's why I think Stipe shouldn't have retired that last fight, because it was just marred by eye pokes. And it wasn't like, I don't know, it'd been weird. I think Stipe, I think he wanted to go out on a clean win, you know, a clean victory. But to answer this question, no, I mean.
Yeah, and look, I think some of these fighters, even though they reach a certain point where they becoming, you know, we're going on top becomes very important to them. I think Tyron Woodley said this week, he's like, I need to go out on top, something to that effect. I don't know. I think when you're not in a slump, when you're kind of cruising along and winning and winning and winning, then that last win isn't as important, you know, because look, Stipe's had a lot of success outside of he lost to Cormier and that's it, right? And then other than that, he's had amazing success as a champion and the lead up to becoming a champion. And it feels good. I bet he seems to enjoy the process of training, of fighting and preparing. He seems to enjoy whatever the money that comes with it. Probably could be a bit higher, but he seems to enjoy it. So it's hard. It's hard when you, especially at his age, he's at the age when I think if he retires, that's it. I just don't see him coming back. So for a lot of fighters, that's, Well, again, Oscar De La Hoya is coming back and Mike Tyson thing. So, I mean, this, you know, whatever, 10 years from now, Triller will be doing their MMA legacy series. But realistically speaking, as far as like competing at the highest possible level he can, that's a small window. And once you close that, you pretty much don't get to go back to it. So, yes, I know for most fights, it sounds insane, wanting to go out on top and wanting to fight Ngannou. But again, like we said earlier, he's cut from a different cloth than we are. And maybe he'll regret it later when he sees the footage and when he feels the after effects of those Ngannou punches, but no, I don't think he needed to walk away on top of Sterling.
I have my pick. You'll hear it tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm not going to name names.
You don't have to give a pick.
It's not.
It's
not a top 15 guy. Oh, okay. I can tell you that right now.
I agree.
Someone but very again, close.
I think we had a similar question about, who was it? Someone last week, I think, or recently, I don't know if it was Yanez or something, that we had a similar question. Are they ready for like a top 20 or something like that? Or could they be? And it's not an indictment of O'Malley's skills. He looks, say what you want about the kid's personality. He's such a fun fighter to watch. Man, he's just so exciting in there. He really captures the imagination. And that's, that's what you want in a future star. It's just that top 15 is so deep. In bantamweight, yeah, it's really, really deep, and I think we already see a lot of matchups that are kind of seem to be materializing or close to materializing. And he just doesn't fit in there yet. Is he worthy of a top 15 opponent? Yes. Will he get a top 15 opponent next? I don't think so.
I'd say
just
give him Frankie Edgar.
Wrong? What's wrong with running back O'Malley Vera?
I think Dana made a great point. It's always there. It's there forever. Why go to it now?
I think that heat's great. I think that's the one chance you can give. Not one chance, but right now, I think O'Malley Vera. There's enough heat behind that you could make that could main event a fight night.
I don't think Vera wants that fight right now. Why don't think he cares? Won? He feels like he won.
He beat him.
He finished the first round.
He's not as hung up on it as O'Malley is. Let's put it.
I don't see very much difference between that and we talked about this earlier. But the premise, Chandler, kind of that fight and stuff. I'm kind of in the O'Malley camp on that one. You know, it's you know they're
Well, let's not forget.
I get Windsor. You know, he gets a W. He gets double check. You know, Sean O'Malley has that L now. I get that. It's official. But I do, you know, I do see O'Malley's thinking, you know, okay, it was kind of a freakish kick. You know, it hit a weird nerve. Like he said, like the one that knocked him out was like his toe or something. Like his foot hit the ankle and just hit that nerve. So the problem is O'Malley says so many things. When he actually does say something, I think is correct. Like no one kind of listens because there's so much kind of other filler out there.
It was just one kick though. It was many kicks.
Well, the one kick that started it, but he just didn't go down from that. He actually went down from strikes, but without that foot there for him, it led to him getting more kicks and more punches and more elbows and everything. I get how it was finished, but it was all from that one injury earlier in the fight.
Yeah.
But it's also just
Cheeto said many times he has no interest in taking that fight right now. Yeah. It doesn't make sense.
There's also a slight visual difference, which you mentioned before, which is like Cheeto at least got to throw in some ground and pound. Because remember, that fight is ruled a TKO not due to injury. Like the official record is, and then the last image of the Chandler fight was him falling off the stool. So then force it. Or sorry, no stool behind him and falling out of
yeah,
the
but,
so,
yeah.
So it, I know it's a little thing, but
that was after the fight was stopped. The whole falling on the stool was after the fight was stopped. Mm-hmm. It wasn't in between rounds or anything. It was after the fight was stopped, and then Chandler mm-hmm. was like, "Going, why are you stopping the fight? I want to still fight. And then,
I thought that's what led to it.
It led to the humiliation. The fight was already stopped, and he was like complaining because if you watch again, the fight was already over.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
the ground and pound, that Cheeto got to get him makes enough of a difference for people in people's minds.
The ground and pound led. He got there because O'Malley only had one leg.
But it was the ground and pound that stopped the fight. Officially, it was the ground and pound that stopped the fight.
Yeah, but that's not how that's not the story of the fight. So I
leg
think
kicks are banned in the rematch?
No.
No leg kicks?
No.
What can he do? What else does the guy have to do to win the fight?
That's why
I don't know.
It was a freak spot. Like just one premise. Premise is a very good fighter and for Bellator, but it hit Chandler in kind of a weird spot and it just deaded his leg. I mean, it's a legit win, but I think it's also room for a rematch.
But that is not the first time that's happened to O'Malley. That's the third time that's happened to O'Malley. So it's not like it was just a freakish thing that's only happened one time ever. It's happened a few times to him. So, which leads me to believe that Cheeto Vera had a good game plan, him and his team. They knew where to land that kick. It wasn't, people may say it's a freak thing, but maybe it wasn't. Because
I could see
dealt with many times.
I could see it happening again someday. It's just not, like you said, I don't think Cheeto would want to do it, has any reason to want to do it now. And I don't know. I don't know if there's that much demand for
it. Cheeto booked? Right now?
No, he's not.
His last fight was the loss to Aldo, correct? Am I missing a fight?
Yeah. He wants to fight Marais right now, I think.
Marais. You know what, though? Bantamweight is the best division in the world right now. So it doesn't matter. You can just throw him out against anyone. It's a cool fight.
There's no bad matchup.
But storyline wise, I think there's a story there and story sell. That's all.
Yeah. We don't need to, but it's like we said, it's always there. Always there. Right now, yes. I say yes. All of them. I want them all.
Pancake.
French toast is the correct answer, though.
Really? I'm a waffle man. Casey.
I'm gonna go French toast. French toast.
I'm changing mine to pancakes. Actually, I'm changing mine to pancakes. That's two for French toast.
Weirdo.
Whoa! This is like that random party in that movie Draft Day, where Kevin Costner calls a guy a pancake eating mother effer for some reason, and I'm like, whoa, what? Whoa! Why was that? What was that needed?
One last question. Let me find
one last quick one.
One quick one.
Yes. Real quick, so we get out of here.
Better be good.
I lied.
Oh, well, that's a shame.
Don't worry. We are going to be talking about this card for the next 5 days. Oh, yeah. Don't worry about it.
I mean,
we have no event next weekend.
Perfect question right here.
A-side live chat. Mike, your show, What the Heck, will be out later this week.
We have to have a little meeting after we're done because we're going to talk about maybe an unveiling of a show. Remember?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
We don't want spoilers yet.
Between the links later this week, you guys will be talking about UFC 260. There's gonna be a lot of UFC 260 talk, guys.
Yeah.
Yes, we got you covered. Don't worry about it. But in the meantime, in between time, good night, everybody. AK, for Casey, I am Mike Heck. Thank you for watching. Hope you enjoy the card tonight. We'll see you down the road.
You are all our guest fighters.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.